A nice one from Nella Pekarek.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomas on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m., at the Red on Salmon Street in Portland. Dia de los Muertos is an ancient celebration originating from the indigenous people of Mexico. Festivities will include altar creation, muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, and live musical performances. Again, that's the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st from 12 to 10 p.m. at the Red on Salmon Street. 831 Southeast Salmon Street in Portland.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, before we get to today's program, don't forget about our Fresh Off the Vine fundraising drive. To support programming like Pathways and KBOO in general, go to kboo.fm/give to become a monthly sustaining member today. It only takes a minute to show your support for community-powered radio, and we need it and we appreciate it. That website again is kboo.fm/give. We need and thank you for your support. Today on Pathways, we are going to explore the topic of spiritual longing, that internal force which prompts us to unite with something greater than ourselves. At the same time, no matter what spiritual path we choose, we still have to encounter our shadow. Today, we visit with an author about how to use spiritual shadow work to recover from spiritual betrayal and move from disillusionment to inspiration, from spiritual naivete to spiritual maturity. Our guest is Connie Swaig, PhD, author of Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path, The Dance of Darkness and Light in Our Search of Awakening. Connie is a retired therapist and co-author of Meeting the Shadow and another book, Romancing the Shadow. Her award-winning book, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul, extends her work on the shadow into midlife and beyond and explores aging as a spiritual practice. Well, that sounds good. We need to do a show on that. It won several major awards for best inspirational nonfiction. Connie has been doing contemplative practices for more than 50 years. She is a wife, a stepmother, and a grandmother. Beyond all these roles, she's practicing the shift from role to soul. Well, hello, Connie, and welcome to Pathways.
Thanks for having me, Paolo.
Now, I just love this book. You know, I want to encourage everybody to read this book. I don't usually get so excited, but I read the whole thing, and it's not easy. This is deep stuff in here, very personal, and it really engages the reader to get real with themselves. And I got so much out of it. I highlighted it. I'm going to be going back again and again. So let's talk about it. It's kind of a book about longing, even though it the dance of darkness and light and our search for awakening. But it's all kind of leveraged by longing, and you have this term you call spiritual longing. So what can you summarize what that means for us?
Yes, I call it holy longing, based on a poem by Goethe, actually. But it's our spiritual yearning for something beyond ego, what we sometimes call transcendence, or the divine, or non-duality. And we can recognize it as a part of us that's restless for more, and senses that there's something beyond the material world, that there's something calling to us, or there's something to go beyond. And it's the ego that we seek to go beyond. And okay. So in the spiritual arena today, you know, there are many millions of people doing practices from all the different spiritual traditions. And what I suggest is that desire for spirit, or for the divine, or for God, for our own Buddha nature, or our own Christ nature, is what is really fueling the search.
Okay. And then but this book is very pointedly about the dance of darkness and light, which is in the subtitle. And that was kind of interesting, because it seems like it flies in the face of most spiritual aspiration to think about shadow. In other words, we have this concept, well, the more spiritual we get, the less shadow there is to encounter or deal with. How do you put that into perspective for us?
Well, that's exactly right. So most people think if they pray enough, if they meditate enough, if they do it properly and frequently, that it will just be all light and flowers and, you know, open skies. But that's not what human life is about. And if you dig into the traditions, you'll find that all of them talk about a dark night of the soul. All of them talk about a descent, or a time in the journey where we meet an unacceptable part of ourselves, or a dangerous or frightening part of somebody else. You know, in mythology, it's portrayed as meeting the monster or the dragon. In our own lives, we might meet a charismatic teacher who's very appealing and compelling for us. And then suddenly we see his temper. We see him verbally abuse people. We see her criticize or shame people. And so we meet the shadow of this clergy person, and that precious sacred relationship of disciple student or follower leader is suddenly disrupted. And that meeting with the shadow is often traumatic. It can be traumatic for people, or it can be really covert and subtle, like a small transgression. You know, the male teacher puts his hand on the female student's body somewhere that's inappropriate, or a real sexual assault. So there can be a range of abuse. Maybe there is a comment that's critical, or there's a comment that's really over the top shaming that leads to punishment, physical or
sometimes that's built into the system. Like, I was brought up strict Catholic, so, you know, I learned to go to confession when I was 7 years old. I didn't know what guilt was, you know, and I basically learned fast, because the priest got very upset that I wasn't properly confessing anything. So I learned, oh, I'm guilty whether I know it or not. So, you know, a lot of times this shadow, you know, it preceded the priest, because my unconscious had been, you know, my parents didn't want me to show vulnerable feelings, etc., or to be
so scared. If we grow up with a message like original sin,
yeah, exactly,
you are inherently bad,
right?
You are inherently shameful or unworthy. Your thoughts are wrong. Your impulses are wrong. then there's a part of us that we call the shadow, which is Carl Jung's name for the personal unconscious, that part of us that carries all those forbidden, unacceptable, taboo thoughts and feelings and behaviors. They don't go away. They go into the unconscious, in the body mind. It's not a little corner in the head somewhere. It's in the whole body mind, right? Which is all interconnected. And so people carry guilt and shame, as you said, for decades throughout the lifespan. And right. they carry feelings of needing to be seen, needing to belong, needing to feel special, all those valid feelings that were missing in childhood, they then bring into the religious or spiritual arena. Well, and all of a sudden, the clergy person looks like the solution. Now, you know, this teacher is going to see me in a way I've never been seen, or give me the secret knowledge I've never had, or the secret practice that will wake me up. And so we become unconsciously very invested in that relationship, and we project, or we unconsciously attribute to that person the perfect parent that we never had, the parent that didn't accept us, or didn't really see us, or listen to us, uh-huh. or make us feel special.
Right.
And yeah. So suddenly that teacher is carrying that projection, right? And the two of them are locked into this relationship. It's like a secret deal, a secret pact, because it's so unconscious. And the teachers or clergy people have no training in how to deal with projection.
For sure.
So as a psychologist, we get training about that. But in the religious and spiritual world, there's no even knowledge of it. And some teachers are carrying the projection of hundreds or even millions of people. In India, it's millions of people. So what starts to happen? Their egos start to feel grandiose and immune from consequences. They start to think they can get away with anything because everybody believes they're so great. And they're unconsciously carrying all of this projection. And all of them, like every human being, has unresolved issues. So if they came from an Eastern culture, a monastic culture, there are cultural issues that they bring to the West that are not discussed, that are not processed. There are, like you're describing in Catholicism, maybe sexuality is shamed and forbidden. Same is true for many of the spiritual teachers who come from the East in celibate traditions. And then all of a sudden they're surrounded by, you know, men and women who are really sexually expressive and liberated. And so what happens? They act out. They act out their shadows with harm to others, with harm, with destructive consequences, traumatic consequences. And I realized that nobody was writing about this. There were no books about the unconscious dynamic of this sacred relationship. You know, and even though there are some books about religious trauma, they weren't looking at it from the point of view of what's unconscious in the believer and what's unconscious in the clergy person, and how are they shadow dancing together?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a power differential. There's a power exchange that's happening when you do a projection like that. I know in my case, my mother was a strict Catholic. She loved priests. She thought they were the voice of God. Her best friend was a priest. You know, she basically turned me over to his care, which led to my abuse by the same man that I was confessing the mortal sin of masturbation to.
Yeah.
Imagine what a mind twist that can produce in somebody. I mean, I've done a lot of work on it since then. But so your book really spoke to me about the spiritual betrayal and the projection. You know, I mean, here's a guy, we're calling him Father, right? You know, right. he represents God the Father.
Right.
You know, it's unbelievable when I think back to what I personally went through, which was nothing. It was a very minor, relatively minor abuse, but you know, none of them are minor. The betrayal is incredible because of all of this projection that you're talking
about. That's right. And because of all the meaning. So we attribute so much meaning to that relationship and to the belief system that goes with it. And so if you're believing in Catholicism, for example, and someone says, well, if you do this, you'll go to heaven, and if you don't do this, you'll go to hell, that's extremely coercive, especially to a child, but also to an adult. That's also to an adult. That is abuse of power.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
You know, I always used to say that teaching a child to believe in a God that's going to judge you, ultimately judge you, and could very possibly condemn you to eternal torture if you screwed up before you died, that to me is psychological terrorism, to teach children to believe in a God like that. And I find it amusing that the very strict fundamentalists, you know, talk about how laudable it is to be God-fearing. Who wants to have a God that you have to fear? You know,
yeah.
but to that mindset, you know, that is that's a good thing. I want to be with a God-fearing man or a God-fearing partner. Oh my gosh.
So, you know, there are layers to this in the shadow. I'll give you an example. I had a client who came to me and he said, well, I'm a Buddhist, I'm practicing Buddhism, I believe in Buddhism, I'm doing the meditations, but I can't understand why I still feel so much guilt and shame around sexuality. I just can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. And he started to tell me about his Catholic upbringing. And one day he brought in a dream of a kind of Pope-like figure with a long beard shaking a finger at him and telling him how bad he was. And he said, but I'm a Buddhist. I mean, why was this still there? So there are these layers in the unconscious shadow that are influencing us, no matter what age we are. And that part of him that he had internalized about the angry God or the, you know, what you were just saying.
The judgmental God.
The judge. Yeah, the wrathful God, the punisher. So that was internalized at him at such a deep level. And the Buddhism was just layered on top of it.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until he really found that image, because consciously he didn't hold those beliefs, but unconsciously that image was still generating those difficult feelings in him. And so I wrote this book with the hope that people who have experienced some kind of religious or spiritual, it doesn't have to be a really overt betrayal. It can be a very covert disillusionment or witnessing of somebody else being abused or actual trauma. And I write about how very many people experience PTSD in these situations and really struggle with all the symptoms of PTSD for a long time. And so I wanted to offer some guidance to people about how to identify this when it's going on, how to identify it in relation to being a survivor or a witness of others, how to become a whistleblower and stand up on behalf of somebody, when to separate from a teacher or a community. And often these communities are systemically colluding with the abuse. Yeah. They're set up with hierarchies, with punishments, with secrets, just like an alcoholic family. They're actually a lot like alcoholic families, and they're glued together by these secrets. So in chapter 5 of the book, I give dozens of stories, of scandals that have taken place between spiritual leaders and their students. And I did that so that people would see this is not an isolated event.
Right.
This is across denominations. This is kind of universally was happening and is happening currently.
Mm-hmm.
And what can we do about that?
So
when do you leave? That was the question I was getting to. So you discover that, you observe it, you begin to kind of try to process it, you go back into denial, you tell yourself you have to stay, there's no life for you outside the group,
right?
There's no meaning, there's no community outside the group. And also you feel duped. You know, you feel like you've made a fool of yourself if you leave.
You've paid such a heavy price. It's hard for it's up to that point. It's hard for the human ego to admit, oh my God, I got duped, or I'm an idiot, or I was fooled. It's very difficult for the human ego to swallow that, particularly when there's, you know, such a large community of people who are going to shun you. You know, it's amazing. It's a cult.
I want to say that, you know, it isn't black and white, Paolo. It's not that we've all been duped. I wouldn't put it that way. That's what the ego feels. But there's often great value from these traditions and from these communities. There's often great beauty in the teachings. I mean, if you think about the books of Osho, Rajneesh, or Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, or Adi Da, the books are genius.
Yeah.
So there's great beauty and profound insight. So it's not that they've been, I'm not talking about cult experts who say, this is all bad, go back to the conventional society. I'm not trying to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that we have holy longing. We have this yearning. It's valid. It's here for a reason. It leads us to profound spiritual experience. And it also leads us to projection. And if the projection lands on the wrong person, someone who has narcissistic tendencies or authoritarian tendencies, or is even a sociopath, which I think some of them are, then we're going to get into trouble. And then the groups can become cult-like, meaning everybody thinks the same and dresses the same and talks the same, and everybody is kind of in a collective mental state, emotional state.
And everybody is idolizing the leader.
That's right.
You know, and projecting perfection onto them. And one of the things you wrote in your book that I found interesting is this concept, although some teachers have suggested that a sudden moment of awakening illuminates all residue in the personal shadow, I no longer believe this possibility. That's what you wrote. But that's what people think. They think, well, once you're enlightened, you don't have any of this psychological garbage to deal with. And you're pointing out that that is completely wrong, that a person, a spiritual teacher can be very enlightened in some ways and very burdened with unresolved shadow issues at the same time.
That's right.
That's a novel concept. And so what you're telling people is be aware of that going in, and separate the teacher from the teaching. You could get a lot of value from the teachings, as you pointed out. And I agree with you. Chogyam Trungpa was brilliant. And so Osho I never cared much about because I was here in Oregon and saw the damage they did to our civil culture here. But he was such a phony. But he was brilliant. He was funny. He was, but anyway.
So, you know, one of the missions for me, one of my personal missions in writing this was to try to understand that. How is it possible that someone can be in an advanced state of consciousness or level of awareness and still act out the shadow? How is it possible that if you have spiritual maturity, you don't have emotional maturity or emotional integrity.
Right.
How is that possible? And so I really worked with that idea in the book to try to help people understand, and as you said, discriminate. Learn how to discriminate between what works and what's life supporting and what's of value and what is not. What is coming from the shadow that's unconscious and destructive?
What is your opinion about the whole idea of having or needing a guru or a special teacher? It's kind of like having a soulmate in a way, you know, but there's many schools of thought, particularly in India. I lived in India for a year and I thought I needed a guru and I was looking for one, but because that was the common understanding, you know, you got to find your guru when the student's ready, the teacher appears, blah, blah, blah. But what do you think? How important is it? And I'm of the mind now, well, just take the good and leave the rest behind. You know, find the good wherever you can. You don't have to be like...
People have different journeys. So There are people on a devotional path, whether it's Christian devotionalism or Hindu Vedanta or Buddhist devotionalism or Muslim devotionalism. They're on a heart-centered devotional path. And for those folks, they need an object for their longing. So they need someone to carry that projection for them. My hope is that that is temporary, that that is a stage on the path where they can then release that person from the projection and reclaim for themselves what they were giving away.
Right.
There are other people whose path is about knowledge and discrimination. It's a different path.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
It's about scripture. It's about learning.
We're basically running out of time. I mean, this is so fascinating. We could go on for a long time. But you want to make an invitation to our audience today about some free online groups to do spiritual shadow work. Can you speak to that for
us? So for any listeners who want to read Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path and would like to do it in community, I have now hundreds of free online groups going on to do this together. They're organized by time zone. And so if you send me an email, Connie Zweig, Z-W-E-I-G, at gmail.com, please put spiritual shadow work in the subject line and be sure to send me your time zone. I will connect you with other people. So if you're in Oregon, I'm going to connect you with other people in Pacific time. And you'll be able to go through the book together. And I will send you guidelines as well for the chapters. And the second half of the book is about spiritual shadow work, how to recover, how to reclaim your projections and really rekindle your inspiration on the path.
Wow, that is very generous of you. The email again, folks, is conniezweig@gmail.com. And you have a website. I want to be sure that people know about that too, which is www.conniezweig.com. Now that's all one word, Connie, C-O-N-N-I-E, Zweig, Z-W-E-I-G. Well, thank you, Connie, for being on the show today. It was delightful. I wish we could go on a lot longer. We'll have you back if we're so lucky. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paolo, for your support and enthusiasm.
Now, for those who may have tuned in to Pathways late today, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Connie Zweig, PhD, author of Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path, The Dance of Darkness and Light in Our Search for Awakening. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific time. Even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, and that's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcast.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's annual fall membership drive is just getting started, and now's a great time to become a member of KBOO. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 right now. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Join the KBOO family today and help us meet our $55,000 fall drive goal. All the cool kids are doing it.
That's Doc Watson, one of the many artists you can hear on the Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning, when we share a wide variety of traditional and contemporary folk and roots music with you from 5:30 to 7 a.m. Each week, your hosts Dan Schrammack and Stephen Morrison bring you some of our favorite new releases and plenty of vintage favorites. It's a great way to start